You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunnyside Up. I'm your host, Nicola Hudson, and today I'm really excited to speak with Sally Winter on marketing mastery, really beginning to scale marketing in a fast-growing tech company. An award-winning content producer and SaaS marketer, Sally specializes in the workplace technology sector, where she's led marketing functions in startups, scale-ups, and multinational enterprises. She's currently marketing director for Benefex, the tech company that uses employee benefits, recognition, and well-being platforms to power exceptional employee experiences for global companies. Sally, welcome. I'm very excited to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for bigging me up in the intro.
You're very welcome. I'm very excited. Awesome. Sally, so it'd be good to kind of start and set the scene. Would you be able to share the kind of strategic significance of AI in the modern marketing landscape and really how it's starting to shape the way marketers approach their campaigns?
Yeah, like it. Let's do AI first, right? Because it's a marketing podcast and we'll all have our credentials taken away from us if we don't mention AI at least five times. But yeah, it's not a surprise that I'm going to say AI is kind of a big deal, right? I think it would be a surprise if I didn't say that. It's going to fundamentally change marketing and it's going to fundamentally change the types of jobs that people do in marketing forever. So I think that should be the lens we look through when we're deciding our strategies and what tech to put into the marketing tech stack.
Awesome. And you're right, it's going to be kind of part, everyone's going to be talking AI. It's going to be a priority for CMOs, marketing directors like yourself, especially as we go into 2024, you absolutely have to be talking about it. What would you say are the kind of the key concerns and challenges in implementing AI into kind of B2B businesses and really how companies can drive innovation in their AI strategies in to stay competitive?
Yeah, so I suppose there's the macro level globally, right? Where in terms of the key challenges, I think you can summarize them as numerous and serious. You know, the Silicon Valley companies that are leading what let's be honest, is an unregulated charge in this tech space, have grown up in a culture where it's like move fast and break things. But this is different, right? We're in a completely different landscape. Even in B2B, where if you look at data, we're arguably dealing with less sensitive personal data, for example, we're still affected by the emerging risks that we're seeing in bias, the kind of dodgy data and misrepresentations that AI serves up, accusations of plagiarism, fake news, there's all that macro environment. And then on a micro level, my info security team have issues because even in, a tool like generative AI, if you're putting things in there, you're putting things in there, right? And nobody is quite clear what will happen to those things. And so there are short-term micro risks, I think, and then long-term existential risks, I think it's not an understatement to say.
And it's interesting you mentioned the kind of putting things out there into ChatGPT. Can it be removed? Is it legal? Is there privacy issues there from the business point of view? But also you mentioned kind of the emerging bias, the plagiarism for that more kind of macro long-term effect of kind of AI. How would you say companies should drive innovation in their AI strategies to stay competitive?
Yeah, so I think that falls into two buckets as well. I think when we're looking at the practical solutions and applications that we can use now, there's the pinpoint solutions, right, where we can take something like a Gen AI tool and use it to improve SEO, speed up our content production, help us design landing pages, something like that, for example. And then the second is the MarTech stack. So specifically making the most of AI innovation that's being developed elsewhere within platform options like yours, right? Where we're not going to be as a B2B marketeer within a company providing, creating our own AI solutions. We're going to be looking to see what options we have and making good buying choices, because, you know, creating your own AI tech should not be an extra thing on the CMO's to-do list. So yeah, I'm kind of putting it to you, I suppose, you know, the marketing tech platforms that are building AI capabilities that we need to adopt in our ABM, our CRM, our CMS, our SEO, our MAT, all the other acronyms that we have in that tech stack, kind of those pinpoint solutions, right? And then the other bit being the kind of tech that we're buying. So I think it's about buying well and understanding the tech that we're investing in and how that is serving us the best in AI innovation for the objectives that we need it to deliver. So don't want to sort of pass the buck on who's needs to do the AI innovation here, but buying well sounds a bit easy. But I think there's a massive challenge for marketers in there, because how can you be a savvy buyer of MarTech and how do you avoid creating, I've heard it called a Frankenstack of marketing technology, especially when there's 9,932 MarTech solutions on the market on matched AI capabilities, you know? So I think there's a difficulty in it for us as buyers to see actually what AI applications are working well and will work well best for us.
So you mentioned there like the pinpoints are helping with the SEO, the content production, landing pages, but also buying well. I'm shocked at 9,932.
Yes.
How is that an easy decision?
Exactly right. And I forget the name of the guys who come up with that. I've got a link somewhere, but you know, every year the options for MarTech increase exponentially, really. You know, I'm old enough to remember running my first Google campaign because Google AdWords had first come out. And it was like every single piece of tech that came on the market, you could adopt it, right? Because it was doing something you hadn't been able to do before, and it was the only piece of tech that could do that. And now there's so much choice and so much in the market that actually buying tech becomes a skill in itself.
No, I agree. I agree. And so many vendors say the same thing. We do this, we do X.
Right.
It makes the buying journey complex, difficult to determine the differences between vendors. I'm glad I'm not in the marketing shoes of having to look for that. All
well, you just have to come up with the innovative AI tech, right?
You know, demand-based underlying technology is AI, but we also do have a kind of a rules-based approach as well, so that you do get the best of both worlds. So it's rather than it being a black box of AI and not really knowing why things happen and why it's segmented this way, we do have that combination, but also the underlying AI technology.
Yeah. To our point, our job as marketers is to know what that is, right? Because everyone's going to have a C-suite coming to them saying in 2024, how are we using AI? And we should know where we are benefiting from it.
And are you using it now, today, in BenEffex?
With caveats, because, you know, I mentioned our info security team, who are brilliant, love them, got to say that on a podcast. They have real concerns about the open platforms and what goes on there and how that's treated. And so we've got a sort of working group looking at how we can best address that and address their safety concerns whilst getting the most out of it.
And it's the same across our team, like SDRs looking to kind of implement and pull call summaries. And we're thinking we've got to be careful in terms of what data you're putting in there. But it's got to be a topic that every business is talking about from a marketing standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share with me the insights on how your ABM campaign effectively measured brand impact? And I know it led to a $10 million deal and really increased brand visibility. And I suppose what lessons marketers can learn from this story?
Yeah, I think a lot of marketing leaders in companies that look like ours, sort of mid-sized companies, will recognize the challenges we had. So, you know, from an ABM point of view in particular, we needed to run creative and effective ABM campaigns, but we didn't necessarily have the budget or the resources of the massive global tech companies. So we couldn't, you know, I've seen case studies in conferences where massive companies have said, and then we built an experiential center for customers to come and visit. And, you know, you clocking up about a £10 million campaign budget in your head, and we didn't have that. So we needed to run effective ABM within the existing budget. So we built a repeatable model that would let us do that. And if you look at that model, it's fairly complicated and it's not very pretty because it maps out the channels, the schedules, the content matrices, the segments, the messaging mapping and all of that kind of stuff. So the model's fairly complicated, but what was important to us is that the execution was simple and repeatable. So that in a nutshell was asking ourselves, what are we going to do to make sure every decision maker, project owner, and peripheral influencer as well in the organizations we were targeting knows who Benefex is, likes what Benefex does, and trusts that we can do it well. So, you know, essentially moving them down the classic marketing funnel. And the platform for those messages was our existing content. So we repurposed that to align with the goals of the prospect organization and cut the content into different campaigns based on our target personas for the project. So in this case, for this particular campaign, we had four personas. One was benefits, which tends to be the job title of our primary buyer. Then the second one was leadership for senior HR roles. Another one was well-being leads, because employee well-being is key driver of why people deliver employee benefits, really, and a key driver for this project that we knew the prospect had articulated. And finally, procurement and IT as like a strong influencer group for HR tech purchases. So those were the personas, and we took them through the funnel campaign with existing content that we'd edited to hit specific pain points and objectives for each of those personas. So at the top of the funnel, the no stage, we were using brand content to raise awareness. And the objective for that was there shouldn't be a person working in HR for that account who hasn't heard of Benefex. Mm-hmm. So we were lucky enough because it was a large organization. There were a lot of people working in HR. So LinkedIn was a really important channel for us, because we had the size of the audience that we could use that. And we targeted those personas with relevant content through LinkedIn. And we did some retargeting display ads as well to our known audience. Obviously, because we don't yet have an ABM platform, we were restricted to known audience, but we did what we could there. And our measurement for that was really eyeballs. And like I say, just knowing that as many people had seen the Benefex brand, so in passing conversations with colleagues, it was something that people were familiar with. Then at the middle of the funnel, we're emphasizing sort of shared beliefs with content that spoke at a very personal level to the known pain points and objectives again. And then towards the bottom of the funnel, you know, we're looking to build trust. And for that, we're using proof points, evidence, looking at similar companies who we'd been on this journey with and how we could provide added value to them. And then you mentioned lessons. So in terms of lessons, I think there was a lot that went into the campaign, but we were able to run it with relatively light resource considering, because we had such a plethora of primary research and we had the rich content to draw on. So I think lessons that I think other people could take from it, because it did work really well, is that firstly, great content is really important. So I was at where we met, Nicola, at the ABM conference a couple of years ago. And everyone, so one of the speakers said, remember when we all used to do content marketing and everyone rolled about laughing? And I was like, because we still rely a lot on content marketing. And I think it's become a little bit unfashionable, maybe because it's just been renamed to demand gen, right? But it was really important for us to have that content that could be easily repurposed and already spoke to the pain points that our buyers are coming to us with And so it didn't need much to be very targeted to the account that we were looking to. And then secondly, getting the repeatable model in place. Like I said, it wasn't pretty and it looks complicated, but that's because it covers a lot of activity. But the actual problems, as just said, that organizations are coming to us with are very familiar. And you'll find the same, right? There's not actually much left or right of field that is different. People tend to have a core set of pain points. So with that model in place, we can execute at speed every time we do it.
And have you done it again?
So yeah, it's going well. I wish we could do more of it. And this is, I suppose, back to that point you were asking about building a team out, right? And scaling is what do you do then next? What are the next roles you bring into the team? Where at the minute we've got campaign, events, digital, and product. What would you bring in next? Would it be a demand gen team? Would it be a customer marketing team? Would it be a specific ABM team? And when you're still a relatively small team, how do they cut across each other? And how do you make those intersections work really well without banging up against different teams? And I think that's the challenge for our next stage of growth.
I think it's such an amazing story that you worked with the budget that you had rather than, going and requesting budget for this initiative and using the channels where you've seen success, building out a process, although not pretty, but it's generated a great deal. And the fact that you can now mirror it, repurpose the content, as you mentioned, the pain points are very similar, but just making it more meaningful for that organization. And then it's like, how would you get the team to, come in and demand gen? You've got campaign, you've got events. Is it who's next to kind of build on that? It's a really incredible story.
And it's like when you say, we generated it, we didn't generate it, we influenced it, but it's about flipping the measurement that we were all on the hook for, right? Into influence and companies seeing and boards seeing influence as a really strategic measurement and not a vanity metric. Again, back to the ABM conference, there was someone speaking there and they talked about just sourced opportunity. It didn't matter where it came from anymore. It was just, from marketing or sales. And they were all a big, like, huggy team. We're not quite there yet. I still like to say a marketing did this. But it moves us away from just how many leads were there to how much of this pipeline have you influenced through to close.
Amazing. No, it makes sense because it is a combined force, so you'll get there as soon as
Lucky guys.
how would you say companies should use events and kind of other non-brand focused activities to build kind of that brand recognition, in those core personas speaking about? And even when like brand isn't the primary goal, what are the kind of the key elements in achieving the emotional connectivity with the audience?
So there's quite a lot in there, isn't there? I don't know if we might unpack it for the original one, but just unpacking it a bit. I think I disagree that events aren't a brand-focused activity, but I think it's a good discussion point for us to have, because I would say that 50-50 and brand is a really important part of events, but it's not what most people, including my team, get measured on. But just because most of us can't measure how effective it is for brand, it doesn't mean it's not their primary purpose, right? And this always reminds, every time we talk about brand at events, it reminds me of a conversation I had a couple of years ago with a CMO, European CMO of a large US tech company that were moving into Europe. And literally the centerpiece of their strategy was to go to all the key industry events with just the biggest, flashiest stand possible. And that was the strategy. And within a few years, they were 200 million turnover in Europe. So it worked, it was their primary goal. We'll come on to the emotional connectivity in a bit, but there's something that connects with us all emotionally, right? When we go into, you guys at B2B marketing, you go in, that's the biggest, best stand there, right? it has an emotional connection with you and you can't help but be impressed. So there's something about just showing up and being seen that is really powerful. And I think we need to be stronger as well in our mindset and remember some truths about what works in marketing before we go into this constant short-term scramble for leads. And brand advertising is meant to make you easy to mind, right? And then when the buyer is ready, your lead gen makes you, or demand gen makes you easy to find. And that's really important because, you guys talk about this a lot. We know that only 5% of our potential buyers are actually in market at any one time, right? So any kind of lead gen isn't going to work for the other 95% that really don't need or want what you're offering right now. But brand is what is working for them, right? When they come around to their cycle in 3, 4, 5, 7 years and know who you are. And then, the other truth about marketing is, Les Binet argument, like it should always be a 50-50 investment in brand and demand. And I know that's a target that a lot of us struggle to meet a lot of the time. But they're the kind of things that we need to be presenting to the exec team to help make the case for not measuring events purely against lead gen.
It's really interesting because you mentioned the 5%. You've still got to build brand around them for when they are ready in that cycle. So it's just a harder one to measure. And I know a lot of exec teams are like, we need to see the immediate results. And it may be 5 years down the line that that company remembers you from that event and they have that pain and need and challenge now. It's interesting. It's an interesting topic.
Yeah. And I think, back to that advice for people who are in my position, I've been here 3 years. And that's, you're going to be hopefully in your job for more than a couple of years. So when you arrive, do the brand bit, because now I can see the results of that. I can see the results of those foundations we laid and that we just didn't do lead gen. And it's paying off now and I'm still benefiting from it, right?
Sally, is there a book, blog, newsletter, or video that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I like this. It made me feel a bit embarrassed about my shelf behind me, which has some books on it, which I literally haven't opened, but are probably really good.
Don't be embarrassed.
Must read more marketing books. But I would recommend, and I haven't read the whole book, but I've been to a lot of her presentations about it, Antonia Wade, who was a CMO that I worked for previously. Now she's global CMO at PwC. She wrote a book called Transforming the B2B Buyer Journey. And I found that really useful. It sort of brings together all the things we know about the buyer journey, like things you talk about, like how late in the buying cycle we actually get to have conversations with these people. Sort of not new in the content, but I think it reframes them in a refreshing way that I think will help people see or set the North Stars around their strategy. So yeah, I found that one really useful.
Awesome. I'm going to go and watch and read after. Sounds good. Any kind of people that you would say are inspirational that you should recommend that we bring to the show?
Yeah, so Melanie Hill. So we're part of a wider group called Zealous. So Melanie Hill is the CMO there. And she's always good for chewing the fat on B2B marketing because I think they have much bigger deals than even ours and much longer decision-making cycles. So it's always good to get her take on things.
And then Sally, for our listeners, how are they going to get in touch with you after the podcast?
LinkedIn, everyone's on LinkedIn, aren't they? And I think I've been on LinkedIn so old, it's like my Hotmail, right? My Hotmail is sallywinter@hotmail.com. LinkedIn, I think
LinkedIn,
my tag is Sal Winter, but yeah, I'm on there.
Awesome. I have a Hotmail account now as well. So that puts us both back.
Oh, when you say as well, you said that was quite new. Are they coming back in? Because maybe I should just stay there till it becomes fashionable again.
stay forever. I've had mine for a very, very long time. I think it's the I have lots of other email addresses, but that's the one that I go to. So yeah, that's good. So LinkedIn for the viewers, but also sallywinter@hotmail.co.uk. There we go. Awesome, Sally, that was fab. I really enjoyed speaking with you. I always learn a lot every time I have conversations with you. I think, yeah, everything that you've done is really impressive. Talking about kind of the AI and, you know, your experience in building a successful team and bringing in kind of ABM initiatives using what you've got already to prove lots of success. So I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Today's episode is made possible by Demandbase. Demandbase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunnyside Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demandbase TV.